Welcome to episode 289 of the Truth Quest podcast, the truth about the abolishment of the Environmental Protection Agency. Please subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform, share episodes with your friends, and support the podcast by shopping at truthquestshirtfactory.com, where we produce shirts with thought-provoking expressions inspired by various podcast episodes. Question: how big is the federal government? Answer: at last count, nearly 2 million civilian employees and over 440 agencies. Question: how many of the 440-plus agencies are constitutional? Answer: probably less than 10%. The Environmental Protection Agency is one of those unconstitutional federal agencies and should be abolished and defunded by Congress today. Truth be told, few federal agencies have caused as much damage to Americans' pocketbook than the EPA. It began operating on December 2, 1970, after President Nixon signed an executive order. Pause. Seriously, another executive order doing trillions of dollars of damage to the country, literally by the stroke of the pen? Hell, just a year later, Nixon took the country off the quasi-gold standard we were on since Bretton Woods. How much damage has that executive order caused in the ensuing 50 years? A complete debasement of the currency. At this rate, folks, where the majority of the country's legislation is dictated by the executive branch without a congressional vote, how are we any different than living under a monarchy? What in the hell is wrong with Congress? An executive order is not law. Just strike it down and abolish the agency. Or a better question to ask is, why didn't Presidents Ford or Reagan or one of the Bushes or Trump reverse Nixon's executive order? After all, if you live by executive orders, you should also die by them. Tells you a lot about DC, doesn't it? Let's get back to the topic at hand. You are likely thinking, how can I make such a bold statement about defunding and abolishing an agency as important as the EPA? Simple. Besides the fact that it was established by an executive order, it's unconstitutional. How do I know that? Because the powers granted by the states to the newly created federal government are listed succinctly in Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution. These powers listed in those 18 paragraphs include the following: 6 paragraphs concerning the military and militia, 4 on money and taxes, 1 on commerce, 1 on naturalization and bankruptcies. There's a paragraph about post offices and post roads, 1 on copyrights and patents, 1 on federal courts, 1 on maritime crimes, 1 on the governance of the District of Columbia, and finally, 1 paragraph gives Congress the power to, quote, make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers. This is known as a necessary and proper clause. More on that in a few minutes. That is everything the federal government is constitutionally allowed to do. Now, just in case there's any confusion after reading Article 1, Section 8, the Founding Fathers authored the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, which reads, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. As James Madison explained in Federalist 45, quote, the powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. Madison continues that those powers that are to remain in the states are numerous and indefinite. Few and defined, numerous and indefinite. To finish the Madison quote, he said, quote, the former, that being the powers delegated to the federal government, will be exercised principally on external objects as war, peace, negotiations, and foreign commerce, with which last the power of taxation will, for the most part, be connected. He goes on to say, quote, the powers reserved to the several states will extend to all the objects which, in the ordinary course of affairs, concern the lives, liberty, and properties of the people, and the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the state. Hello? Ordinary course of affairs? Internal order? Prosperity? Can you say pollution? Can you say the environment? The point is, Article 1, Section 8 says nothing about the environment. Nothing about carbon or pollution or electric vehicles or water or air or climate change or radon or environmental justice, all of those things that the EPA are involved in. Despite the fact that the EPA should not exist, it has an annual budget of over $10 billion and an employee base of over 16,000 people, all of whom should be working in productive private industries rather than in a government agency that adds nothing to the economy but instead acts as a drag. You should check out epa.gov. I mean, if you want to know which federal agencies are bloated and wasteful, perform what I call the website depth test, which is simply the process of going to a website and seeing how many pages deep you can actually go before you hit the end of that branch. In the case of epa.gov, I stopped counting at around a dozen. I went from our mission to regulations to Clean Air Act to EPA history, origins of EPA, historical topics, historical resources about statutes, resources, and policies, Federal Water Pollution Control Act. It is literally endless. The mission of the EPA, as stated on the website, is to protect human health and the environment. Again, nothing in the Constitution mentions either. Leading proponents of unlimited government and tyranny dare anyone to oppose an agency such as the EPA, which of course leads to cowardice members of Congress steering well clear of the message that I am conveying here. Continuing with a review of the website, quote, the EPA works to ensure that Americans have clean air, land, and water. National efforts to reduce environmental risk are based on the best available scientific information. Federal laws protecting human health and environment are administered and enforced fairly, effectively, and as Congress intended. Environmental stewardship is integral to U.S. policies concerning natural resources, human health, economic growth, energy, transportation, agriculture. Oh my gosh, I can't even go on with this. All parts of society, communities, individuals, businesses, and states, local and tribal governments have access to accurate information, blah, 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 that contaminated lands and toxic sites are cleaned up by potentially responsible parties and revitalized, and chemicals in the marketplace are reviewed for safety. Only a moron would oppose all of those wonderful goals and aspirations, right? The site goes on to say, to accomplish this mission, we develop and enforce illegal and unconstitutional regulations. We give grants. We study environmental issues. We sponsor partnerships. We teach people about the environment, i.e. preach the gospel of the climate change hoax and talk about environmental justice. And we publish information. Wow. They left out the part about killing the domestic car industry, harassing general industries and consumers, and raising the cost of energy by regulating the hell out of it. Normally, I would steer clear of Wikipedia, but for these types of episodes where I am advocating for the abolishment of entire federal agencies, I like to read what the propagandists think is important for the useful idiots and the ill-informed to know. Here's what we learn about the EPA on Wikipedia. The agency conducts environmental assessment, research, and education. It has a responsibility of maintaining and enforcing national standards under a variety of environmental laws, in consultation with state, tribal, and local governments. EPA enforcement powers include fines, sanctions, and other measures. It delegates some permitting, monitoring, and enforcement responsibilities to U.S. states and the federally recognized tribes. The agency also works with industries and all levels of government in a wide variety of voluntary pollution prevention programs and energy conservation efforts. It goes on to explain the history of the EPA as it absorbed 8 to 10 back then unconstitutional federal agencies, such as National Air Pollution Control Administration, the Environmental Control Administration's Bureau of Solid Waste Management. I mean, I can't even get my breath for some of these. They're so long. The Bureau of Water Hygiene, the Federal Water Quality Administration, the Federal Radiation Council. Anyways, it goes on to explain that in the first year, the EPA had a budget of $1.4 billion and just under 6,000 employees. Do you remember the numbers I quoted just a minute ago? Its budget has since expanded 10x. And the employee base 3x. It goes on. At its start, the EPA was primarily a technical assistance agency that set goals and standards. Soon, new amendments passed by Congress gave the agency its regulatory authority. A major expansion of the Clean Air Act was approved in December 1970. It goes on to extol the virtues of that act. You know, fuel economy standards, water pollution. It's clear throughout that the climate change hoax drives much of the agency's actions. It talks about gas standards for passenger cars and light trucks and includes this delicious propagandist declaratory quote. Quote, the standards which will reduce climate pollution and improve public health become effective in the 2023 vehicle model year. It's almost too much. Again, demonstrating the bloated nature of this monstrosity federal agency, check out this list of offices within the EPA. The Office of the Administrator, has 12 divisions, including the Office of Administrative and Executive Services, Office of Children's Health Protection, Office of Policy, Office of Public Affairs, Office of Continuous Improvement. Then it goes on just to list, you know, some general offices under the EPA, such as the Office of Air and Radiation, the Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention, the Office of Environmental Justice and External Civil Rights, the Office of International and Tribal Affairs, and the Office of Mission Support, which has 13 other offices under it. Then you have the Office of Research and Development, which has about a dozen other offices listed underneath it. You have the Office of Land and Emergency Management, which has six sub-offices, and the Office of Water. The Office of Water. Get this. It has the following sub-offices. The Office of Groundwater and Drinking Water, the Office of Science and Technology, the Office of Wastewater Management, and Office of Wetlands, Oceans, and Watersheds. There's more. This next part is under the heading Legal Authority. The Environmental Protection Agency can only act pursuant to statutes, the laws passed by Congress. Appropriation statutes authorize how much money the agency can spend each year to carry out the approved statutes. The agency has the power to issue regulations. A regulation interprets a statute, and EPA applies its regulations to various environmental situations and enforces the requirements. The agency must include a rationale of why a regulation is needed. Regulations can be challenged in federal courts. So this is another clear example of congressional abdication of duty. They pass a law that sounds really, really good, like the Clean Air Act, or the Clean Water Act, or the Comprehensive Environmental Response Act, or Compensation and Liabilities Act, or Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, Safe Drinking Water Act. Then they hand that law off to an unconstitutional federal agency where unelected and unaccountable bureaucrats make all the rules that apply to all of us serfs. No, thank you. The EPA's very existence is illegal and unconstitutional. Therefore, any regulation, any enforcement, any fines issued by the agency are null and void. Why the fuss, you may ask? Because there's no recourse when unelected and unaccountable bureaucrats go too far, which is clearly the case with the EPA, and their obsession with combating a scientifically challenged hoax agenda of the Earth's temperature rising due to man's activities. And please spare me the, well, that's what we have a court system for argument. Why should a business or an individual be required to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to oppose an unconstitutional and illegal regulation? Why is the burden of proof on them to go up against the resources of the largest government in the history of the world, especially given their penchant for operating a dual justice system? One that pursues political opponents of the doomsday cult, formerly known as the Democratic Party, via a gauntlet of lawfare lawsuits using novel legal theories. There's no need for a federal agency to deal with fuel economy standards or emissions requirements or greenhouse gas standards for cars and trucks. The individual states are perfectly capable of handling all of that. For topics with more macro environmental impacts, the states can create coalitions with other states to address them. But as prescribed by the Constitution, the federal government has no power to be involved in this area of life, and therefore any policy prescriptions, regulations, and/or dictates are null and void. They have no authority. There are laws on the books already making pollution a crime. State legislatures and state courts can deal with those who violate that law. In 2022, the Supreme Court heard the case of West Virginia versus the EPA. I want to spend a few minutes to review the opinion to give you an idea of how out of control the EPA is specifically, but the administrative state generally. This should reinforce my demand that the EPA and many other unconstitutional federal agencies be abolished. The vote was 6-3, with the court's three liberal constitution-ignoring musketeer justices in dissent. That dissent, authored by Elena Kagan, was full of usual references of their desire for society to rely on experts to make determinations of such things as the environment. You see, liberals have no need for their elected officials to weigh in. Just allow the unaccountable, unelected bureaucrats and the expert class to make decisions for all us rubes in society. The money quote from the dissent was that the opinion stripped the EPA of, quote, the power to respond to the most pressing environmental challenges of our time. of course referring to the hoax climate change agenda. She spent the first paragraph of the dissent spewing the same claptrap bullshit that we hear every day from leftists, citing the maligned and discredited IPCC studies, citing a host of amicus briefs filled with unsubstantiated doomsday claims, the Earth is the warmest it's ever been, man is causing it, 4.6 million people will die because of it, and apparently the EPA can do its part in stopping it. Typical liberal position. Rely on experts, spew misinformation, and make vague, undefinable claims. These people are not to be taken seriously and definitely should not be in positions of power. They are not doing their job. They are activists, plain and simple. The majority opinion was written by John Roberts, along with a concurring opinion authored by Neil Gorsuch. For the most part, Roberts spends his time stating that the Clean Air Act does not empower the agency to put a limit on emissions and force power plants to move away from fossil fuels and towards renewable energy. The majority essentially argues that the EPA overstepped its bounds, citing the agency's normal behavior over the last 50 years, and called bullshit on their overreach. Roberts claimed that the Clean Air Act, as written, that Congress had not given the agency sweeping authority to regulate the energy industry. He basically argued that Congress must be involved in these regulations, since the EPA moved from suggesting standards to dictating how electricity should be generated. He stated, quote, "We also find it highly unlikely that Congress would leave to agency discretion the decision of how much coal-based generation there should be over the coming decades." He went on to say, "Capping carbon dioxide emissions at a level that will force a nationwide transition away from the use of coal to generate electricity may be a sensible solution to the crisis of the day, but it is not plausible that Congress gave EPA the authority to adopt on its own such a regulatory scheme. A decision of such magnitude and consequence rests with Congress itself, or an agency acting pursuant to a clear delegation from that representative body." Gorsuch's concurring opinion was marvelous. It was reminiscent of so many of Clarence Thomas's opinions. Here's a collection of Gorsuch's greatest hits. Quote, "But by vesting the lawmaking power in the people's elected representative, the Constitution sought to ensure not only that all power would be derived from the people, but also that those entrusted with it should be kept in dependence of the people. The Constitution, too, placed its trust not in the hands of a few, but in a number of hands." He goes on to explain that it's more important to have local accountability than a distant federal authority making decisions, and in this way allow states to serve as laboratories for novel social and economic experiments. He's basically pointing out there that the Constitution rejects one size fits all in most instances. He goes on, quote, "Permitting Congress to divest its legislative power to the executive branch would dash this whole scheme. Legislation would risk becoming nothing more than the will of the current president, or worse yet, the will of unelected officials barely responsive to him. In a world like that, agencies would churn out new laws more or less at whim. Stability would be lost, with vast numbers of laws changing with every new presidential administration. Laws would more often bear the support only of the party currently in power. Powerful special interests, which are sometimes uniquely able to influence the agendas of administrative agencies, would flourish, while others would be left to ever-shifting winds." He goes on to say, "This court has said that an agency must point to clear congressional authorization when it seeks to regulate a significant portion of the American economy." Additionally, he says, "When an agency's claim the power to regulate vast swaths of American life, it not only risks intruding on Congress's power, it also risks intruding on powers reserved to the states." Here's a final quote from Gorsuch's concurring opinion. "When Congress seems slow to solve problems, it may be only natural that those in the executive branch might seek to take matters into their own hands. But the Constitution does not authorize agencies to use pen and phone regulations as substitutes for laws based by the people's representatives. In our republic, it is the peculiar province of the legislature to prescribe general rules for the government of society. Because today's decision helps safeguard that fundamental constitutional promise, I am pleased to concur." So I have a side note on this whole opinion. After reading it, I noticed something peculiar. References to the Constitution were glaringly absent from significant portions of it. That struck me as odd, since the sole purpose of the Supreme Court is to offer opinions on the constitutionality of the case or the law being presented to them. So I did a word search on the opinion, and guess what I found? There were First of all, it's an 89-page opinion, and there were 30 references to the Constitution. Chief Justice Roberts mentioned it once. Kagan, in her dissent, mentioned it twice, and one of them she was quoting someone else. The rest of them, the 27 others, were in Gorsuch's concurring opinion. Who do you think is upholding their oath of office out of those three people? Who do you think's doing their job? In these abolish episodes, I typically take a quick look at the agency's press releases as they offer great insight into the mentality of each agency, but in the interest of time, I'll simply say that the EPA's press releases are a collection of announcements whereby they either announce woke initiatives with the favored phrase of equitable development strategies, or they're handing out money for electric buses and other wasteful initiatives, or they're making demands on municipalities to do their bidding on a host of environmental issues. As I do in all of these episodes where I am advocating for the abolishment of an unconstitutional federal agency, I feel compelled to address the necessary and proper clause because invariably someone out there is invoking it as a way of dismissing my argument. This particular clause resides at the end of Article 1, Section 8, and reads, "The Congress shall have the power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof." So the key word there is foregoing powers, right? It doesn't say Congress can pass laws about anything and everything. It doesn't mean they can pass laws on whatever is convenient or popular at the moment. And since pollution and fuel and emission standards, electricity generation, carbon dioxide, and climate change are not one of the enumerated powers, the fact that a president over 50 years ago signed an executive order giving birth to this agency doesn't mean jack shit. Any subsequent president can revoke the previous executive order. One of the strongest arguments for the overbearing EPA is this. Although the Constitution divides power among the three branches and assigns all legislative powers to Congress, nothing about that division limits Congress's power to delegate rulemaking authority to executive agencies, so long as Congress retains ultimate control over the legislative process. After all, do you really think Congress has the expertise to deal with something as complex as the environment? So here we go again with the leftist's favorite call for the expert class, which should be rejected outright. Subjugation to experts is straight out of the Communist Manifesto. Be very careful and very suspicious about that. Even if you buy that argument, the EPA is still illegitimate. It's illegally constituted. It's unconstitutional. Therefore, say it with me, anything it does is null and void. Consider the Clean Air Act. It doesn't matter that Congress passed that law. If the law is unconstitutional, it is null and void. And since the law that grants the EPA its insidious powers is unconstitutional, the EPA should be abolished today. One final argument about abolishing unconstitutional federal agencies is, given the dire financial situation that the federal government finds itself in, with national debt soaring to above $34 trillion as of this recording, and with interest rates and price inflation rates at generation high levels, it's time for the federal government to trim back to its original size and scope. A small piece of that puzzle is the abolishment of the EPA. In my mind, the strongest abolishment argument is the constitutional question. But I also wanted to point out that few people ever ask the question, why? Like why is a federal EPA necessary? I mean, for the first 200 years of the nation's existence, we operated without centralized guidance on the subject of pollution and the environment. To which I can hear many of you saying, well, what the heck, man? Pollution impacts everyone. There was all kinds of environmental problems in the 1960s that needed to be addressed that required some centralized control over it. My response is simple. That's a good point. I recognize that pollution in one state impacts other states, but constitutionally speaking, the agency is not allowed to exist. There's no need for a federal agency to police the environment on private and state property. Federal lands? Sure, go for it. Anywhere else? I'm sorry, but there's no authority for that. I'm trying my best to be consistent here. We cannot fall into the trap of subjectiveness when it comes to the federal government. The Constitution is the guidebook and must be adhered to, otherwise everything is a moving target. Everything is subjective. And like Justice Gorsuch argued in West Virginia v. EPA, things will simply ebb and flow with the different administrations that come into power. If, as a country, we feel that the EPA is necessary, the only path that should be taken is for a debate to take place whereby a constitutional amendment is suggested and if ratified, then the EPA is now constitutional. Until then, it is a dead agency and should be abolished today. And that's the truth about the abolishment of the Environmental Protection Agency. Please subscribe to this show on your favorite platform, share episodes with your friends, and support the podcast by shopping at TruthQuestShirtFactory.com.